We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Claire Keating, who's the Green Party's candidate for Limerick at this year's Irish general election that occurred earlier in the year. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Will. Delighted to be here.
So the first question that I'd like to ask is, what made you decide to stand for the Irish Parliament at this year's general election?
Well, I suppose the last 5 years I've spent working as an environmental activist on the ground. Where I was living, there was plans for an incinerator to go up back in 2015. And myself and a few others living in the locality got together and we formed a group called Limerick Against Pollution. And we basically began a campaign growing awareness to the people living in the locality as to the dangers of an incinerator, especially in an area where 20,000 people are living within a 5 kilometre radius. So we began our campaign and we're still fighting to this day. We've gone through many different stages. So they were granted the planning permission and now we're at the licensing stage with the Environmental Protection Agency. So that's the reason I got involved. It was from kind of, I suppose, from an activist point of view and realizing that you're up against a system that is very much about promoting big business and very much about making sure that that big business gets whatever they want at all costs. And they don't really seem to care too much about people's public health or people's health and the public don't get much of a say. So I kind of felt very frustrated and I was like, well, there's no point in me jumping up and down. Let's just see if we can try and get in there and make change from the inside, because it's very hard to do anything from the outside when you're just a regular Joe person, a regular citizen. So that's the reason I decided to run.
Now, as I mentioned, the election was at the start of this year. It was in February. And of course, this was before we saw the greater extent of the coronavirus hitting the UK and Ireland. Was it at all an issue on the doorstep towards the end of the campaign, or was it not at all mentioned?
Not at all. It wasn't mentioned whatsoever, because I suppose the election was February the 8th and it was a very short election. It was 3.5 weeks. The date was only called in January. So we were given 3.5 weeks to hit the ground running and cover as much, of the population in the constituency I was running in, which was in County Limerick. So it was a very short window. So in terms of coronavirus, lockdown didn't happen here until the 10th of March, which was a week before St. Patrick's Day. So there was no mention of the coronavirus whatsoever. Everybody felt, that it was very much an issue for people living in Asia and China. So we didn't think that we'd ever be affected by it.
How do you think that the Irish government have dealt with coronavirus in Ireland?
I think they've done their best, to be fair. Look, this is an unprecedented pandemic. We've no idea how to handle this. It's coming at us like we've had highs and lows and peaks and all sorts of things. We've had to adapt very, very fast to the changes that are coming. But the numbers, unfortunately, are going back up here again since we opened up businesses and pubs and restaurants and things like that. But I think they're doing their best. I really do. And there's no point. I think we all have to get behind them and do what we can to eradicate this virus if we want civilization to go back to normality. Even when people were out of work at the height, they were paying all of the citizens €350 every week, which I think was the highest of any EU country. So I think they were really looking after the people, because people still had bills to pay, they had to feed their children, feed their families, and all that crack. So that had to continue. So I think that they really, I felt that was a fantastic thing to do, make sure that everybody had a wage no matter what, while the pandemic was still going on. But I don't know, I can't really see any end in sight at the moment, unfortunately.
Do you think that it's something that needed to be more of a Europe-wide response? Do you think things may have been not quite as severe in Europe if there had been more working between different EU countries?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, you look at the likes of Italy and Spain, the numbers there were absolutely scary. Like, look, we've had about 1,700 deaths here in Ireland. That's still pretty high. That's in the Republic of Ireland. I think Northern Ireland have close to 600-700. And it seems to be predominantly people, you know, of nursing home age and in their 70s and 80s. But I think that we were really caught off guard. I don't think there was enough communication between Europe on how to handle this whole pandemic. I agree with you there. I don't think it was handled correctly, as to there wasn't like a plan put in place. We all worked together. Like, I think the airports are still open, the ports are still open. So I know goods still have to come and go, and that has to continue. But, you know, I feel allowing people travel, and, you know, not everybody is doing what they're supposed to do in terms of coming home and doing your 2-week quarantining. Not everybody's doing that, unfortunately. And it's still snowballing, you know, and there's no end in sight. So I don't know, should we do what they're doing in Australia, New Zealand? Should we close our airports, close our ports, you know, for a specific amount of time, whether it be 2 months, 3 months, and really try and eradicate it that way? That's probably what we should be doing, because they got rid of it in New Zealand there. And I think it did come back in small, tiny numbers, but they took immediate action. They shut the country down. And I think that's probably what we should have done, you know, here in Ireland, being an island as well.
Now, just turning back to the campaign, one of the things, I think you just mentioned it a moment ago, is that Limerick is, of course, quite a rural county, has a great deal of farming and agriculture. Did that make it easier to get through your message in regards to climate change, or was there more resistance to some of the arguments you were making?
Yeah, a lot of resistance. where I was running, it's predominantly kind of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, which would be the old Civil War parties of Ireland. So it's very hard to break that cycle. They kind of saw me rocking on, like, with my Green Party hat on, as God, your one now is here to instill, you know, austerity and put taxes on us and tax everything, tax their machinery, tax the fuel that they're using, and all that kind of crap. But they were completely and utterly misinformed. But some of them were interested in listening. The younger ones especially, the younger people that were taken over from their parents, taken over farms, they were interested in listening to what the Green Party had to offer. But I think the older ones, very difficult to convince. Very, very difficult to convince. They weren't at all open to change. Even though they weren't really getting a whole pile from the current situation. But I suppose they were just fearful, really. Fearful of change.
Now, the result of the election was not an absolute majority for any party. Do you think that that reflects a sense in Ireland that there is sort of a fragmented view of how the country should go forward?
Yeah, there is. Like Sinn Féin got like serious amount of votes in the election. They way more than anybody would have thought. Like, I suppose I felt that the Green Party would have done a bit better. They did get 12 TDs elected in the end, you know, which isn't enough for a majority in any case. But no party got the majority, whether Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin. Nobody got the majority, which is why we had to come into a kind of a government sharing coalition situation. So now we have three parties in government, so you have Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens, in order to make up those numbers. But there was a real threat there that Sinn Féin wanted to be in government. They really, really wanted it. But nobody was willing to go and make up the numbers with them. They tried everything. They tried to get Fianna Gael to get involved, Fianna Fáil to get involved, and the Greens. Now, the Greens did talk to them, but some of their policies weren't really sitting very well with us. So I think, like, what we've achieved with the current situation, it's pretty good. You know, it is pretty good. Like, I'll just give you a quick idea. Like, they've agreed that 7% annual reduction in emissions, an end to direct provision, which is a big situation in Ireland right now, a ban on fracked gas imports, and then they have agreed that 10% will be spent of the budget on cycling and walking. They've agreed to build 50,000 new public homes, 500,000 retrofit homes, so you'll be retrofitting houses that are half built or derelicts. Mm-hmm. And also, there's a lot of other, there's so many other points, like with regard to solar energy and national land use plan and all that kind of thing. So we got a lot out of what we wanted. So I think the Green Party did well in terms of negotiations.
Do you think that Ireland is perhaps, against other countries in Europe, much more progressive in terms of climate change and green issues? Do you think that Ireland is in many ways leading the way where other countries can follow?
We are in some ways, but we have a commitment now to 2030 to reduce our emissions by 7%. And everybody seems to be on board with that. But I still think, you know, the situation I'm fighting outside of my Green Party hat is the incineration side of things. Mm-hmm. So I still think incineration is a backward step when it comes to climate change and things like that. Now, there is a lot of a move. There's lots of people moving towards electric cars, towards retrofitting their homes, solar energy, all that kind of thing. So there are... there is change happening. It's slow, but it is happening. I don't know if we are the leaders in Europe. We're certainly doing our best to show example. And I think people are beginning to realise that we have to do something here. Like this climate change situation is urgent. I think the likes of Greta Thunberg has opened up the eyes of younger people, the younger generation, because we have these strikes here every Friday in Ireland called. Fridays for Future. So you have young people out. They spend the Friday afternoon out striking for climate change, you know, in solidarity with Greta Thunberg and her movement. So I do think there is change happening, and it's gradual. But I think having the Green Party in government is certainly a plus for that.
Mm. Do you think that part of the reservations that there may have been in Limerick may have been in part due to the mixed signals over the Limerick to Cork motorway? Mm. Do you think that that was part of the reason that some people saying, well, we need this motorway, but, you know, there doesn't seem to be as much enthusiasm for the leadership of the Green Party as there could have
Correct.
Been?
Correct, yeah. And that was a gripe that I had with Eamon Ryan and others in the Green Party. Living in County Limerick myself, I use that road quite a bit, and that road is... It's horrific. It's pretty bad. And people that use it every day to go to work, commute, for trucks that are bringing goods from A to B, they've been harping on about this for donkey's years, and it's been an issue for a very long time. And it's been promised by previous governments that this road would be done, and never happened. And Eamon Ryan made a statement about it, saying that the Greens weren't really for it, that there was other options about pushing in ring roads and all that kind of thing, which... Like I felt personally speaking, look, I know that, you know, we're trying to get more people or more cars off the roads and people to go electric or people to go on cycling or walking. But I think at the end of the day, like there is an urgency right now for that road. And that did turn a lot of people that I was trying to convince to vote off, definitely. And I kind of felt that, you know, that he shouldn't have said anything with regard to that and make such a statement. And it did definitely affect not only me, but people that were running for the Green Party in Cork as well. I know councillors down in Cork that were running, and they said the same thing, that they said that they were getting it on the doorsteps as well, because some of them were commuting up to Limerick and vice versa. So that was a very controversial time for sure. But I tried to, you know, put a positive spin on it, saying that I was actually personally for it, which I was. I think that road has to happen. It has to take place. On a personal, Eamon should come down and drive it himself and actually realise how dangerous it is and how many accidents are taking place. And it's just not a very, it's not a good piece of transport motorway, full stop. Has to happen.
Now, of course, one of the issues that is related to transport and motoring is Brexit and the travelling of goods between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. What concerns do you have regarding that?
So, like Brexit again, another issue that's been going on for forever. But that area between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland is a 310-mile border, land border, and nobody living down here, I don't think anybody living up in Northern Ireland wants to go back to a situation where that border is manned and you have checks and you have customs, and that's the reason I think it would be a real backward step if that happened. Like we fought for long enough for peace in Northern Ireland, and we're living in harmony as we speak right now. And I think if Boris Johnson does decide, you know, to put checks in there or put some kind of a barrier, you know, with regard to Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, when they do pull out of the EU, it's going to be detrimental. I think we could be going backwards, and I don't know what kind of a situation we'd be living in. But you know, the Good Friday Agreement, we know that was backed by so many countries, especially the United States, and they've come out and said that they don't want any sort of border put back in Northern Ireland, you know, between the two countries, the two countries, and that they will retaliate as a result with regard to trade. So I think he needs to be very careful here as to how this is handled and how it's dealt with. But because we have peace and harmony right now, and I think you just, like, why would you upset that? Why would you go backwards in that kind of a situation?
Mm. Now, if Britain does leave the European Union without a deal, leaves on no deal terms, what impact do you think that that's going to have on businesses in Ireland?
Yeah, like there is at the moment, okay, we have common travel, common free trade. It's going to have a huge impact in Ireland. Like we rely on Britain for lots of kind of an access to the rest of the EU and vice versa. Like we're very supportive of, you know, that Britain gets obviously the best deal for themselves, but like Ireland, it has to be taken into account as well. And I think, and I'm hoping that the negotiations, like there's nothing set in steel yet between Boris and our Taoiseach, but I hope that they do reach an agreement for all. I think it's so important that, you know, the travel and trade remains as impacted as lowly as possible. Because I just think, you know, like at the end of the day, we've been good neighbours for a long, long time now, and nobody wants to upset that relationship. So I'd like to see something positive come out of that negotiations whenever it does happen, whenever the EU does come out. Like it's going to happen. The EU has made up its mind, or the UK has made up its mind that they want to leave, which is unfortunate, I think. But, you know, we have to respect their decision. But I just think I'd hate to see... You know, I hate to see both countries falling out, you know, over trade or over a travel ground and that kind of thing happening. But it's still, I suppose, it's still up for debate, isn't it?
Mm. Do you think that there are any parts of Ireland, or any people in the Republic of Ireland who are perhaps sympathetic to the UK's situation and feel that perhaps Ireland should leave the European Union? Or do you think that most people in Ireland are broadly supportive of the European Union?
Most people appear to be supportive. Anyone that I've spoken to, very much. There's been no mention of us ever leaving the EU. No government or party has ever brought it up. I think we've really learned a lot from watching what's happening over in the UK, and you know that's unfolded. I think a lot of it. My own brother lives over there in London. You know, and he was even saying a lot of it back at the time was very much misinformed. People were misinformed as to what it would mean. Leaving the EU. So I think people really didn't know what they were voting for. But I think we've learned a lot from watching what's going on over there now. And I think, you know, we do rely on like the living in the Eurozone and the common travel and all that. And I think it's become part of us now. I can never see it happening. I think Ireland would suffer immensely if we were isolated over here in Western Europe. I think we would suffer in terms of trade, in terms of travel, in terms of like everything. I think I don't really see the benefit of it for us, unfortunately, you know.
Mm. Now, of course, we've mentioned the United States, and there's going to be a presidential election in, I think, about 6 weeks in the US between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And now Joe Biden has spoken quite a bit about it, pride in his Irish heritage and wanting to be a friend to Ireland. If he wins the presidential election, what do you think will change in the relationship between the United States and Ireland?
Again, will he win? I don't know. I think Donald Trump, you know, he still has a massive, massive following over there. And it's quite scary after 4 years that people still are brainwashed by him. Joe Biden, yeah, I think he would probably be the best option, you know, in terms of who should take the presidency at this stage now. Like, will much change? Donald Trump has a link here. He has a golf course here in Ireland in Doonbeg, and he employs people down there. And Joe Biden, I don't think it will make much of a difference. You know, I would like to see him elected, definitely, over Donald Trump. But I think at the end of the day, like, both men are in their 70s. They're both in their late 70s. I think one is 74, one is 76 or 77. You know, I think it's quite unfortunate that there isn't, you know, a choice for the voters over there, that there isn't, like, a female candidate, that there isn't a mixed race candidate, that there isn't, you know, like, I think, is that what America, is that what represents America, two men in their, two white men in their 70s? Yeah. You know, I think it's quite unfortunate, you know, that that is all that they have to offer over there. But it's just, they have only two choices, you're Democrat or you're Republican, and that's pretty much it. So, you know, I would like to see Biden obviously get elected over Trump 100%.
Now, when you were standing for the Green Party in Limerick, there hadn't been a female candidate, a woman elected as TD for Limerick before. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's back to, I suppose, what I said earlier about civil war parties, you know, and it's always been men. Even this time around, like, we've 7 seats in Limerick, you've 4 in the city and 3 in the county. And out of those 7, I think maybe 6 or 7 women ran as well. And no female got elected. 7 men were elected to the 7 seats. So I suppose some people put up the argument maybe the women weren't good enough, that they weren't, you know, that they, the men, you know, had it, had better support and the better backing and things like that. I think it's unfortunate. I was hoping to, like, be the first female TD elected in the county and the first green TD elected in the county. Now, we were lucky enough to get a green TD elected in the city, Brian Ledden, which was the, and he's the first ever green TD elected. But there's still very much, people's views are still very historic, and they kind of, they have a tendency to do what their parents done and their grandparents done. Like, you know, you follow that party and that candidate, you know, and that's the way it is down here. And it is kind of changing slightly, but, you know, I don't know, will it in the next, I think the next election is 2024. Will people's mindsets change by then? I'm hoping, and I'm hoping the younger people coming up, that they will register to vote and they will have a say as well, because that's so important, you know. But yeah, it's hard. It's extremely difficult in Northern Ireland to get elected as a woman and as a Green, because it's just, you're going against, you know, going against the norm of what people have voted for the last 100 years.
Now, I know in Limerick, you're beginning a pilot scheme at the moment for helping businesses becoming zero carbon neutral. What more can you tell our listeners about that campaign?
Yeah, so at the moment, I've also joined an organisation called Zero Waste Alliance Ireland. Now, this again came about as a result of my ASM role with Limerick Against Pollution, and offering people an alternative to their waste in terms of reduce, reuse, recycle. People at the moment, everything is going either into an incinerator or is going into landfill. And now we need to start training people to look after or to be responsible for their waste. And so as a result of this, me joining this organisation, Zero Waste Alliance Ireland, we're doing some workshops at the moment. And the whole idea is to use Limerick as a pilot scheme, the city and the county, starting with businesses and then moving on to schools, households, and telling people how they can reduce their waste and how they can save money, and making them more aware of you know, where does my waste go? Where does my plastic bottle end up? Where does, you know, my container end up? Like, getting people to think, you know, I think, and lots of people now are, from, I mean, my friends that I've spoken to about it, like, they are definitely waking up to the whole waste situation. And that's something that we need to be responsible for. Every country needs to be responsible for its own waste. We shouldn't be shipping our waste abroad to the likes of China or Denmark or wherever to get it incinerated. We should be producing very little waste if everybody does what they're supposed to do. You know, reduce, reuse, recycle, and you know, and that has to be what people have to get into the habit of doing, you know, and change their lifestyles that way.
Now, we're coming to the end of the podcast. It's been great speaking to you, Claire, and I have one final question. Now, as we've mentioned, coronavirus has impacted on us all, and we've all been in lockdown at various different points. So my final question to this to you is this. During lockdown, what one thing that you weren't able to do did you miss most?
That's a good one. Yeah, I suppose traveling. I think traveling. As I said, my brother lives in the UK, and they just had a new baby. And you know, it wasn't being able to see him. You know, because we would go over quite a bit. Go over. He would come here. It's family. Not being able to see family. Not being able to socialize, especially my parents as well, because they were cocooning. They were over the age where they had to. They had to isolate themselves. So it was. It was all very strange, you know, but at least I could drive out to my parents and, you know, social distance with them. But, you know, not seeing my brother and his wife and the baby, that was difficult. So, yeah, I think it makes you realise how important that is.
Well, I hope, everything is better soon, so you're able to see your brother and his child soon. If people want to find out more about your campaign in Limerick, where should they go?
Basically, if you want to follow our campaign, it's Limerick Against Pollution and at @LAP_Limerick. And also for myself, I'm on Twitter at Claire Keating GP and on Instagram and Facebook as well at Claire Keating GP.
Great. Well, I hope people check all those out. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Will. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
For listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.